air of face. I also wondered about the constantly gray skies. At least in the daytime, they were constantly gray, but at night, the clouds sometimes parted to allow the moonlight to shine through, which, in turn, seemed to activate the wolves. Not a single moon up there, but two, one chasing the other. And that made me wonder exactly where I was. I'd read enough science fiction to know about the idea of parallel worlds and multiple Earths, but I had an idea that when I passed through that place in the underground corridor where my mind and body seemed to separate, I might have arrived on a different plane of existence altogether. The possibility that I was on a planet in a galaxy far, far away made a degree of sense because of the two moons, but these weren't alien life forms. These were people. I thought about that book on Mr. Bowditch's bed table, the one with the funnel filling up with stars on the cover. What if I'd found my way into the world matrix it was supposedly about? I wish to God I'd put it in my pack along with food, radars, pills, and Polly's gun. The idea made me remember a movie I'd watched with my mom and dad when I was very young, The Neverending Story, it was called. Suppose Empus was like Fantasia in that movie, a world created out of collective imagination. Was that also a Jungian concept? How would I know, when I didn't even know if you pronounced the guy's name Jung or Jung? I wondered about those things, but what I kept coming back to was more practical. My dad. Did he know I was gone yet? He might still be ignorant of the fact, and ignorance, so they say, is bliss, but, like Woody, he might have had an intuition. Parents, I'd heard, were prone to them. He would have tried to call, and when I didn't pick up, he'd text. He might just assume I was too busy with school shit to respond, but that wouldn't hold for long, because he knew I was pretty responsible about hitting him back as soon as I could. I hated the idea of him worrying, but there wasn't anything I could do about it. I had made my decision. And besides, I have to say this if I'm going to tell the truth, I was glad to be here. I can't exactly say I was having fun, but yes, I was glad. I wanted answers to 1,000 questions. I wanted to see what was over every next rise and turn. I wanted to see what the boy had called the haunted city. Of course, I was scared of Hannah, of the night soldiers, and something or someone called Flight Killer. Most of all, of Gog Magog. But I was also exhilarated. And there was Radar. If I could give her a second chance, I meant to do it. Where I stopped to have lunch and rest for a while, the woods had closed in on both sides. I saw no wildlife, but there was plenty of shade. Want some chow raids? I hoped she did, because I hadn't gotten any of the pills into her that morning. I opened my pack, got out a can of sardines, opened them, and tilted the can toward her so she could get a good smell. She lifted her nose, but didn't get up. I could see more of that gummy stuff oozing out of her eyes. Come on, girl, you love these. She managed 3 or 4 steps down the slope of the cart, and then her rear legs gave out. She slid the rest of the way, slewing sideways and uttering a single high-pitched yelp of pain. She hit the hard pan on her side and lifted her head to look up at me, panting. The side of her face was smeared with dust. It hurt me to look at that. She tried to rise and couldn't. I stopped wondering about the whole people, the gray people, even my dad. All of that was lost. I brushed away the dirt, picked her up, and carried her onto the narrow grass verge between the road and the bulking masses of trees. I laid her there, stroked her head, then examined her back legs. Neither appeared to be broken, but she yipped and bared her teeth, not to bite, but in pain, when I touched them high up. They felt okay to me, but I was pretty sure an X-ray would have shown badly swollen and inflamed joints. She drank some water and ate a sardine or two, I think to please me. I had lost my own appetite, but made myself eat some of the fried rabbit Dora had given me, plus a couple of cookies. I had to feed the engine. When I picked Raids up, carefully, and put her back in the cart, I could hear the rattle of her respiration and feel every rib. Woody had said she was dying, and he was right. But I hadn't come all this way to find my dog dead in the back of Dora's cart. I grabbed the poles and moved on, not running. I knew that would blow me out, but at a fast walk.
Hang in. Things might be better tomorrow, so hang in for me, girl.
I heard the thump of her tail against the cart as she wagged it. 3. The clouds darkened as I pulled the cart along Kingdom Road, but there was no rain. That was good. I didn't mind getting wet, but getting soaked would make Radar's condition worse, and I didn't have much to cover her with. Also, pulling the cart might be difficult or even impossible if a hard rain turned the road to muck. Maybe 4 or 5 hours after Radar took her spill, I breasted a steep rise and stopped, partly to catch my breath, but mostly just to look. The land fell away before me, and for the first time, I could see the towers of the city clearly. In this dull light, those towers had a sullen olive cast like soapstone. A tall gray wall ran into the distance on both sides of the road, as far as I could see. I was still miles away, and it was impossible to tell how high it was, but I thought I could make out a monstrous gate in the center. If that's locked, I thought, I am truly fucked. The road between Woody's and where I stopped to rest and look had been curving, but it ran straight as a string to the city's gate. The woods began to draw back a few miles ahead, and I saw abandoned carts and what might have been hand plows in overgrown fields. I saw something else, too. A vehicle, or some sort of conveyance, coming in my direction. My eyes are good, but it was still miles away, and I couldn't make out what it was. I touched the butt of Mr. Bowditch's .45, not to confirm it was still there, but for comfort.
Raids, you okay?
I looked over my shoulder and saw her looking back at me from the front of the cart. That was good. I grabbed the poles and began to walk again. My hands were raising a pretty decent crop of blisters, and I would have given a lot for a pair of work gloves. Hell, even a pair of mittens. At least it was downhill for a while. A mile or two further along, the towers sinking behind the high city wall as the road descended, I stopped again. I could now see the person coming my way appeared to be riding an oversized tricycle. As we closed the distance between us, I saw the trike's rider was a woman and making good speed. She was wearing a black dress that billowed all around her, and it was impossible not to think again of the Wizard of Oz. Specifically, the black and white part at the beginning when Almira Gulch rides her bicycle under threatening Kansas skies to get Dorothy's dog and have him put to sleep for biting her. There was even a wooden carry basket on the back of the oncoming tricycle, although this one was much bigger than the Toto-sized one on the back of Miss Gulch's bike.
"Don't worry, Raids," I said. "She's not taking you anywhere."
When she got really close, I stopped and flexed my stinging hands. I was ready to be friendly in case this was who I thought it was, but I was also ready to defend myself and my dog if she turned out to be the empressarian version of the Wicked Witch. The woman stopped by reversing the pedals of her tricycle and sending up a pretty good squelch of dust. Her dress quit billowing and fell limply against her body. She was wearing stout black leggings beneath the dress and big black boots. No need for any of Dora's replacement footwear for this lady. Her face was rosy with exercise and without the slightest trace of gray. If forced to guess, I would have said she was in her 40s or 50s, but it would be just a guess. Time is strange in Empis, and so is the aging process.
"You're Claudia, aren't you?"
I said.
"Wait, I have something to show you."
I opened my pack and took out the gold door knocker. She barely gave it a glance, only nodded and leaned over her handlebars. Her hands were dressed in leather gloves that I bitterly envied.
"I'm Claudia. Don't really need to see that. I dreamed you were coming."
She tapped her temple and barked a laugh.
"Dreams aren't trustworthy, but then this morning I saw the snab. Always a sign of rain or company."
Her voice wasn't just loud, it was utterly toneless, like the voice of an evil computer in an old sci-fi movie. She added something I hardly needed.
"I'm deaf."
She turned her head. Her hair was done up in a high bun, and I could have seen her ear if she'd had one. She didn't. As with Leah's mouth and Woody's eyes, there was just a scar. 4. She hitched up her skirts, dismounted her trike, and strode to the cart for a look at radar. On the way, she tapped the butt of the holstered .45.
"Bowditch's. I remember it. And I remember her."
Radar lifted her head when Claudia stroked her, then scratched behind her ears in the way raids really liked. Claudia leaned close, apparently not the least bit afraid of being bitten, and sniffed. Radar licked her cheek. Claudia turned back to me.
"She's sick as hell."
I nodded. There was no point denying it.
"We'll keep her going, though. Will she eat?"
I waggled my hand, meaning a little. "Can you read lips?" I patted my own, then pointed to hers.
"Never learned too much,"
she blared.
"No one to practice on. We'll give her beef broth. She'll eat that, for God's sake. Bring her back a right smart. Do you want to put her in my basket? We might go faster."
I couldn't tell her that I was afraid of hurting Radar's sore back legs, so I just shook my head.
"All right, but come along smart. 3 bells won't be long. End a day. There are goddamn wolves, you know."
She pushed her big trike, the seat had to be at least 5 feet off the ground, in a circle, then clambered up. She pedaled slowly, and the road was wide enough for me to walk beside her, so Radar and I didn't have to eat her dust.
4 miles,
she shouted in her toneless voice.
"Pull lively, young man. I'd give you my gloves, but your hands are too big. I'll give you some good liniment for them when we're undercover. My own recipe, and it's damn good. They look mighty sore."
5. By the time we neared Claudia's, the day was darkening, and I was all but done in. 2 days of pulling Dora's cart made football practice seem like a breeze. Ahead of us, maybe a mile or two farther on, I could see the start of what might have been suburbs, although that word hardly fits. They were cottages like Dora's, but with broken roofs. They sat at a distance from one another at first, with little yards or garden plots, but shoulder to shoulder as they approached the city walls. There were chimneys, but no smoke came from any of them. Roads and streets began to sprout off here and there. Some kind of vehicle, I couldn't tell what, was stopped dead in the middle of the main road. At first, I thought it was a long wagon for hauling freight. When we got closer, I thought it might be a bus. I pointed to it.
"Trolley,"
Claudia boomed.
"Been there for a long, long time. Pull on, young man. Strain your pooper."
That one I'd never heard before. I'd save it for Andy Chen, assuming I ever saw him again.
"Almost there."
From across the distance between the city and where we were, there came the sound of 3 bells, spaced out and solemn. Dong, and dong, and dong. Claudia saw Radar perk up and turn toward the sound.
3 bells?
I nodded.
"In the old days, that meant quit your labors and go home to supper. Now there's no labor and no one to do it, but the bells ring on. I can't hear 'em, but I can feel 'em in my teeth, especially when it storms."
Claudia's house stood on a weedy patch of ground in front of a scummy pond shrouded in bushes. The house was round and constructed of scavenged boards and pieces of tin. It looked mighty flimsy to me, making it hard not to think of the pigs and the wolf again. Woody's was a house of bricks, Claudia's was a house of sticks. If there was another royal relative who'd been living in a house of straw, I guessed he or she had been gobbled up long ago. When we reached it, I saw a number of dead wolves, 3 or 4 in front, and another, paws sticking up out of the weeds, to one side. I couldn't see that one very well, but those in front were pretty decayed, with rib cages poking out through the remains of their fur. Their eyes were gone, probably plucked out by hungry crows, and the sockets seemed to stare at me as we turned onto the beaten path leading up to the door. I was relieved to see that they weren't gigantic like the insect life, but they were plenty big, or had been when still alive. Death had put them on a strict diet, as I suppose is the case with all living things.
"I shoot 'em when I can,"
Claudia said, dismounting her trike.
"Keeps the others away most of the time. When the smell wears thin, I shoot a few more of the fuckers."
For royalty, I thought, she's certainly got a foul mouth. I put down the cart poles, tapped her on the shoulder, and pulled Mr. Bowditch's revolver out of the holster. I raised my eyebrows in a question. I wasn't sure she'd understand, but she did. Her grin showed several missing teeth.
"No, no, I don't have one of those. Crossbow."
She mimed raising one.
"Made it myself. And there's something else even better. Adrian brought it when that one there wasn't much more than a pup."
She went up to the door and pushed it open with a brawny shoulder. I got Radar out of the cart and tried her on her feet. She was able to stand and walk, but at the stone step she paused and looked to me for help. I lifted her in. The house consisted of one large round room, and what I assumed was a smaller one, hidden by a blue velvet curtain, enlivened with threads of scarlet and gold. There was a stove, a tiny kitchen, and a work table scattered with tools. Also on the table were arrows in varying stages of completion and a wicker basket holding half a dozen finished ones. The tips glittered when she produced a long match and lit a couple of oil lamps. I picked one of the arrows up for a closer look at the tip. It was gold and sharp. When I touched the pad of my index finger to one, a bead of blood immediately welled.
"Here, here, do you want to give yourself an affliction?"
She grabbed me by the shirt and pulled me to a tin-lined sink. There was a hand pump hanging over it. Claudia gave the handle several hard plunges to get it going, then held my bleeding finger in the freezing water. "It's just a little," I began, then gave up and let her do her thing. She finished at last and startled me by placing a kiss on the boo-boo.
"Sit, rest, we'll eat soon. Need to tend this dog of yours, then your mitts."
She put a kettle on the stove, and when it was warm but not steaming, she produced a basin from under the sink and filled it. To this she added some foul-smelling stuff from a crock on one of the shelves. Those shelves were full of goods, some in canisters, some in packages of what looked like cheesecloth tied with twine, most in glass jars. A crossbow hung on the wall to the right of the velvet curtain, and it looked like serious business. All in all, the place reminded me of a frontier home, and Claudia reminded me not of a royal relative, but of a frontier woman, rough and ready. She soaked a cloth in the stinking brew, wrung it out, then squatted over Radar, who looked suspicious. She began to press the cloth gently to those sore upper legs. While she did it, she made an odd crooning noise that I think was singing. It went up and down in pitch, while her speaking voice was just a constant loud monotone, almost like announcements from my high school's PA system. I thought Radar might try to scramble away or even bite her, but she didn't. She laid her head down on the rough boards and gave a sigh of contentment. Claudia got her hands under Radar's body.
"Roll over, honey. I need to do the other one."
Radar didn't roll over, just sort of flopped. Claudia re-soaked the cloth and went to work on the other back leg. When she was finished, she tossed the cloth in the tin sink and got two more. She soaked them, wrung them out, and turned to me.
Hold 'em forth, young prince. That's what Woody called you in the dream I had.
Telling her I was just plain old Charlie wasn't going to work, so I just held them out. She wrapped them in the warm, wet cloths. The stink of her potion was unpleasant, but the relief was immediate. I couldn't tell her with words, but she saw it on my face.
Goddamn good, isn't it? My Nana showed me how to make it long ago, when that trolley still ran its route to Ulam, and there were folks to hear the bells. There's willow bark in it, but that's just the start, my boy. Hold 'em on there while I get us some grubbit. You have to be hungry.
6. It was steak and green beans, with something like apple and peach cobbler for dessert. I'd certainly had my share of free food, grubbit, since coming to Empis, and Claudia just kept filling my plate. Radar had a dipper of beef broth with little globules of fat floating on top. She licked the bowl clean, licked her chops clean, and looked at Claudia for more.
Na na na,
Claudia bellowed, bending to scratch behind Radar's ears in the way she liked.
You'd cack it right back up, you sad old bitch, and what good would that do? But this won't hurt you.
There was a loaf of brown bread on the table. She plucked off a chunk with her strong, work-hardened fingers. She could have pulled that cart all day without raising a single blister. Then grabbed an arrow out of the basket. She impaled the bread, opened the door of her stove, and stuck the bread in. It came out an even darker brown and flaming. She blew it out like a birthday candle, finger-smeared it with butter from the pottery crock on the table, then held it out. Radar got to her feet, picked it off the arrow tip with her teeth, and took it into the corner. Her limp was better. I thought if Mr. Bowditch had had some of Claudia's liniment, he maybe could have skipped the OxyContin. Claudia pushed through the velvet curtain that concealed her boudoir and came back with a pad of paper and a pencil. She handed them to me. I looked at the stamped letters on the barrel of the pencil and felt a wave of unreality. What remained said, "Compliments of Sentry Lumb." There were only a few sheets left on the pad. I looked on the back and saw a faded price sticker. Staples, $1.99.
Write when you have to, but just nod or shake your head if you don't. Save the fucking paper. Adrian brought it with the noisemaker on his last trip, and that's all that's left. Understand?
I nodded.
You came to refresh Aid's dog, didn't you?
I nodded.
Can you find your way to the sundial, young man?
I wrote and held the pad out for her to see. Mr. Bowditch left his initials as a trail. Which, I thought, would be better than breadcrumbs, assuming rain hadn't washed them away, that was. She nodded and bowed her head in thought. In the light of the lamps, I could see a clear resemblance to her cousin Woody, although he was much older. She had a kind of stern beauty under the years of work and target practice on marauding wolves. Royalty in exile, I thought. She and Woody and Leah. Not the three little pigs, but the three little blue bloods. At last she looked up and said,
Risky.
I nodded.
Did Woody tell you how you must go and what you must do?
I shrugged and wrote, I have to be quiet. She made a huffing sound, as if that were no help at all.
I can't keep calling you young man or young prince, although you do have a bit of the princely look about you. What's your name?
I printed Charlie Reed in capital letters.
Charlie?
It was close enough. I nodded. She took a chunk of wood from the box by the stove, opened the stove door, rammed it in, slammed it shut. She resumed her seat, clasped her hands on the lap of her dress, and leaned forward over them. Her face was grave.
You'll be too late to try your errand tomorrow, Charlie. So you'll need to overnight in a storage shed a bit of a way from the main gate. It has a red wagon with the wheels gone in front. Write it down.
I wrote storage shed, red wagon without wheels.
Good so far. You'll find it open, but there's a bolt on the inside. Run it if you don't want a wolf for three for company. Write it down.
Bolt door.
Keep your place until you hear the morning bell. One ring. You'll find the city gate locked, but Leah's name will open it. Only hers. Leah of the Galleon. Write it down.
I wrote down Leah of the Galleon. She gestured for the pad to see what I had written, frowned, then gestured for the pencil. She scratched out G-A-L-L-E-O-N and changed it to capital G-A-L-L-I-E-N.
Did no one teach you to spell in that land of yours, boy?
I shrugged. Galleon or galleon, they sounded the same. And if the city was deserted, who was going to hear me and let me in anyway?
You be there and through the gate goddamned soon after the morning bell, because you have a goddamned long trek ahead of you.
She rubbed her forehead and looked at me, troubled.
If you see AIDS marks, all may be well. If you don't, leave before you become lost. The streets are a maze. You would still be wandering in that hellhole at nightfall.
I wrote, she'll die if I can't refresh her. She read it and thrust the pad back at me.
Do you love her enough to die with her?
I shook my head. Claudia surprised me with a laugh that was almost musical. I thought it was one small remnant of what her voice had been like before she had been cursed to a life of silence.
Not a noble answer, but those who answer nobly have a way of dying young with their pants full of shit. Would you like some ale?
I shook my head. She got up, rummaged in what I supposed was her cold pantry, and came back with a white bottle. She thumbed out a cork with a hole in it, to let the brew breathe, I guessed, and took a long drink. This was followed by a ringing belch. She sat down again, now clasping the bottle in her lap.
If the marks are there, Charlie, Adrian's marks, follow them as brisk as you can, and quiet, always quiet. Pay no mind to voices you may hear, for they are the voices of the dead. And worse than the dead.
Worse than the dead? I didn't like the sound of that. And speaking of sound, there was the one the wooden wheels of Dora's cart were apt to make on paved streets. Maybe Radar could walk part of the way and I could carry her the rest?
You may see strange things. Changes. In the shapes of things, but pay no attention. Eventually you will come to a square with a dry fountain in it.
I thought maybe I'd seen that fountain in the picture of Claudia and Leah that Woody had shown me.
Nearby is a huge yellow house with brown shutters. A passage runs through the center. That is the house of Hannah. One half of the house is where Hannah lives, the other half is the kitchen where Hannah takes her meals. Write it down.
I did, and then she took the pad. She drew a passage with a curved top. Above it, she drew a butterfly with outstretched wings. For a quick sketch, it was very good.
You must hide, Charlie. You and your dog. Will she be quiet?
I nodded.
Quiet no matter what?
I couldn't be sure of that, but I nodded again.
Wait for two bells. Write it down.
Two bells, I wrote.
You may see Hannah outside before two bells. You may not. But you will see her when she goes to the kitchen for her midday meal. That is when you must go through the passage, quick as ever you can. Write it down.
I didn't think I needed to. I wouldn't want to spend much time in Hannah's vicinity if she was as fearsome as I'd heard. But it was clear Claudia was very worried about me.
The sundial isn't much further along. You'll know because of the wide walkways. Put her on the sundial and run it backwards. Use your hands. Mind me, if you run it forwards, you'll kill her. And stay off it yourself. Write it down.
I did, but only to please her. I'd read Something Wicked This Way Comes and knew the danger of turning the sundial the wrong way. The one thing Radar didn't need was to get older.
Come back just as you went in. But beware of Hannah. Listen for her in the passage.
I raised my hands and shook my head. I don't understand. Claudia smiled grimly.
The great bitch always takes a nap after she eats, and she snores. You'll hear that, Charlie. It's like thunder.
I gave her two thumbs up.
Return quickly. It's far, and your time will be short. You don't need to be through the gate when the three bells ring, but you must be out of Lillimar soon after. Before dark.
I printed Night Soldiers on the pad and showed it to her. Claudia wetted her whistle with more ale. She looked grim.
Yes, they. Now cross that out.
I did, and showed her.
Good. The less said or written about those buggers, the better. Overnight in the shed with the red wagon in front. Leave when you hear the morning bell. Come back here. Write it down.
I did.
We're finished,
Claudia said.
You should turn in now, for you must be tired and you have far to go tomorrow.
I nodded and wrote on the pad. I held it up with one hand and took one of hers in the other. Written large on the pad was, "Thank you."
Na, na, na.
She squeezed my hand, then raised it to her cracked lips and kissed it.
I loved Aid. Not as a woman loves a man, but as a sister loves a brother. I only hope I'm not sending you to your death. Or worse.
I smiled and gave her two thumbs up, trying to convey that I'd be fine. Which I was not, of course. 7. Before I could ask any more questions, I had many, the wolves started in. A lot of them, howling their heads off. I saw moonlight shining between two boards that had shrunk apart from each other, and there came a slam against the side of the house, so hard that it made the whole thing shiver. Radar barked and got to her feet, ears up. There was another slam, then a third, then two together. A bottle fell off one of Claudia's shelves, and I smelled pickled brine. I drew Mr. Bowditch's gun, thinking they'll huff and they'll puff till they beat her house down.
Na, na, na,
Claudia boomed. She looked almost amused.
Follow me, Charlie, and see what Adrian brought.
She pushed back the velvet curtain and motioned me through. The big room was neat. Her bedroom wasn't. I wouldn't go so far as to call Claudia a slob about her private quarters, but... You know what, actually, I would go that far. Two quilts were rumpled and thrown back. Pants, shirts, and underwear that looked like cotton bloomers and chemises were scattered across the floor. She kicked garments out of her way as she led me to the far side of the room. I was less interested in what she meant to show me than I was in the wolf attack going on outside, and it was an attack, the battering at her flimsy wooden house now almost continuous. I was afraid that even if the clouds covered the moons, the assault wouldn't stop. They were cranked up and out for blood. She opened a door, revealing a closet-sized room featuring a composting toilet that had certainly come from my world.
Shit house,
she said.
In case you need it in the night. Don't worry about waking me, I sleep like a goddamn stone.
I was sure of that, seeing as she was also as deaf as a stone, but I didn't think I'd be needing the bathroom if the wolves broke through. Not tonight or ever. It sounded to me like dozens of them were out there, trying to get in while Claudia gave me the house beautiful tour.
Now attend you this, Claudia said.
She used the heel of her hand to slide back a panel next to the toilet. Inside was a car battery with AC Delco stamped on the side. Jumper clamps were attached to the terminals. The cables were attached to some sort of power converter. Another cable came out of the converter and connected to what looked like an ordinary light switch. Claudia was grinning broadly.
Adrian brought it, and the fucking wolves hate it.
Cowards bring presents, I thought. She flipped the switch. The result was hammering blats of sound, like a bunch of car alarms magnified 50 or 100 times. I put my hands over my ears, afraid that if I didn't, I'd wind up as deaf as Claudia was. After 10 or 15 very long seconds, she flipped the switch down. I took my hands cautiously away from my ears. In the big room, radar was barking like mad, but the wolves had stopped.
Six speakers. Those fuckers will be running into the woods like their tails are on fire. How do you like it, Charlie? Was it loud enough for you?
I nodded and patted my ears. Nothing could withstand that sonic barrage for long.
I only wish I could hear it,
Claudia said.
But I feel it in my teeth. Ha!
I still had the pad and pencil. I wrote on it and held it up. What happens when the battery dies? She considered this, then smiled and patted my cheek with one hand.
I give you room and board. You bring me another. Fair trade, young prince. I say yes.
8. I slept by the stove, as I had at Dora's. There was no lying awake and pondering my situation that night. Claudia gave me a pile of towels for a pillow, and I was out as soon as my head landed on them. 2 seconds later, that's what it felt like, she was shaking me awake. She was wearing a long coat with butterflies appliqued on it, more of Dora's work.
What? I said. Let me sleep.
No, no, no.
She was deaf, but she knew perfectly well what I was saying.
Up, Charlie! Still far to go ahead of you. Time to be about your business. Besides, there's something I want to show you.
I tried to lie back down, but she pulled me to a sitting position again.
Your dog's waiting. I've been up an hour or more. Dog too. She's had another dose of liniment and feeling perky. Look and see.
Radar was standing beside her, wagging her tail. When she saw me looking, she nosed at my neck, then licked my cheek. I got up. My legs were sore, my arms and shoulders worse. I rotated them, then did a dozen forward shrugs, part of limbering up during preseason football practice.
Go on and do your necessary. I'll have something warm for you after.
I went into the little bathroom where she'd left me a basin of warm water and a knuckle of hard yellow soap. I urinated, then washed my face and hands. There was a small square of mirror on the wall, no bigger than a car's rearview mirror. It was scratched and tarnished, but when I bent, I could see myself. I straightened up, turned to go, then looked again, more closely. I thought my dark brown hair had lightened a bit. It did that in summer, after days in the sun, but there had been no sun here, only lowering clouds. Except at night, of course, when the clouds parted to let the moonlight shine through. I dismissed it as nothing but the light of a single oil lamp and the cloudy scrap of mirror. When I went back out, she handed me a thick slice of bread wrapped around a double helping of scrambled eggs. I wolfed it down. Not sure if that's a pun or not. She handed me my pack.
I put in water and cold tea. Paper and pencil, too, just in case. That cart you've been dragging stays here.
I shook my head and pantomimed picking up the poles.
No, no, no. You're done with that until you return with my three-wheeler.
I can't take your tricycle. She had turned away and didn't hear.
Come out, Charlie. Dawn breaks soon. You don't want to miss this.
I followed her to the door, hoping she wouldn't be opening it to a pack of ravening wolves. There were none, and in the direction of what the boy had called the haunted city, the clouds had broken, and I could see a scatter of stars. Sitting near Kingdom Road was Claudia's oversized trike. The big basket on the back had been lined with a soft white square of what looked like fleece, and I understood that was where Radar was supposed to ride. I realized the three-wheeler would be easier and faster than pulling the cart with Radar in it. But there was something else that was even better. Claudia bent and held the lamp down to the oversized front wheel.
Aid brought these tires, too. rubber. I'd heard of it, but never seen it. Magic from your world, Charlie, and quiet magic.
That convinced me. No worries about hard wheels clattering on cobbles. I pointed to the trike. I pointed to myself. I patted my chest above my heart. I'll bring it back, Claudia. I promise.
You'll return it to me, young Prince Charlie, I've no doubt.
She patted me on the back, then gave my bottom an unselfconscious whack that reminded me of Coach Harkness sending me in to play defense or pinch hit.
Now look to the bright sky.
I did. As the stars paled, the sky over the city of Lillimar turned a beautiful peach shade. There may be such a color when days dawn in the tropics, but I'd never seen one exactly like it. Radar sat between us, head raised, scenting the air. Except for the gunk coming out of her eyes and how thin she was, I would have thought her perfectly okay.
What are we looking for?
Claudia didn't reply because she didn't see me speak. She was looking toward the city, where the towers and three tall spires rose, black against the brightening day. I didn't like the look of those glassy spires, even at a distance. Their configuration made them seem almost like faces that were looking at us. I told myself that was an illusion, no different than seeing a gasping mouth in the knothole of an old tree or a cloud that looked like a dragon, but it didn't work. Didn't come close to working. The idea, surely ridiculous, crept into my mind that the city itself was Gogmagog, sentient, watching, and evil. The idea of going any closer was frightening. The idea of using Leah's name to pass through its gate was terrifying. Mr. Bowditch did it and came back, I told myself. You can too. But I wondered. Then the bell rang out its one long, sonorous iron note. Dong. Radar got to her feet and took a step toward the sound.
First bell, Charlie?
I raised one finger and nodded. While the sound still lingered, something began to happen that was far more amazing than an oversized cockroach or a big red cricket. The sky over the crammed-together hovels and cottages outside the city began to darken as if a shade were being rolled not down, but up. I grabbed Claudia's arm, for a moment afraid I was seeing some strange eclipse not of the sun or moon, but of the earth itself. Then, as the sound of the bell faded to nothing, the darkness broke apart in 10,000 cracks of daylight that pulsated and changed. I saw the colors, black and gold, white and orange, deepest royal purple. They were monarch butterflies, each one the size of a sparrow, but so delicate and ephemeral that the morning light shone through them as well as around them.
Hail, Empress!
Claudia cried, and raised both hands to the rising flood of life above us. That flood blocked the city skyline, blocked out the faces I thought I'd seen.
Hail the galleon! May they rule again and forever!
Loud as she was, I hardly heard. I was transfixed. Never in my life had I seen something so weirdly surreal and so beautiful. The butterflies darkened the sky as they flew above us, traveling to God knew where, and as I felt the wind of their wings, I finally accepted, wholly and completely, the reality of this other world, of Empis. I had come from a make-believe world. This was reality. Chapter 17. Leaving Claudia. Remembering Jenny. A night in the storage shed. The Gate. The Haunted City. 1. Radar settled into the fleece-lined basket willingly enough, although she had a coughing fit I didn't like. Claudia and I waited until it eased and finally stopped. Claudia used the hem of her dress to wipe the room from Radar's eyes and the sides of her snout, then looked at me gravely.
"Waste no time if you'd save her, Charlie."
I nodded. She pulled me into an embrace, then let go and held me by my shoulders.
"Have a care. I'd be sad to see you back without her, but sadder still not to see you at all. Have you got the instructions I gave you?"
I gave her two thumbs up and patted my back pocket.
"Don't use that gun in the city or even approaching it."
I nodded and put a finger to my lips.
"Shh."
She reached up, tousled my hair, and smiled.
"Fare you well, young Prince Charlie."
I mounted the trike and settled onto the seat. After my bike, it felt like sitting on a tower. I had to put some muscle into the pedals to get going, but once the three-wheeler was rolling, it was easy. I looked around once and waved. Claudia waved back and blew me a kiss. I stopped briefly when I came to the abandoned trolley. One of the wheels had come off and it sat aslant. There were old claw marks on the wooden side nearest me and a dried splash of ancient blood. Wolfies, I thought. I didn't look inside. 2. The going was flat, and I moved along at a good pace. I thought I'd be at the storage shed she told me about well before dark. The sky had closed up again. The land was deserted and shadowless beneath low-hanging clouds. The monarchs had gone to wherever they went in the daytime. I wondered if I'd see them fly back to their roosting places outside the city. The wolves might steer clear of the houses and buildings outside the city wall after dark, but I wouldn't want to bet my life on that, or Radar's. At mid-morning, I began to pass the first houses and cottages. A little further on, where the first byway intersected Kingdom Road, the hard-packed dirt gave way to a pavement of crushed stone. I would have preferred the hard-pack, all in all, because that was for the most part smooth. There were potholes in the pavement I had to skirt. The tall trike's stability was fine as long as I could ride a straight course, but weaving was tricky. On several swerves, I could feel one of the rear wheels leave the ground. I was able to compensate by leaning into the lift, as I did when turning corners on my bike, but I was pretty sure that even a moderately sharp turn would dump the thing on its side, no matter how much I leaned. I could take a spill. I wasn't sure Radar could. The houses were empty. The windows stared. Crows, not gigantic but mighty big, strutted through run-to-seed front gardens, picking at seeds or any leftover bright thing. There were flowers, but they looked pallid and somehow wrong. Vines, like clutching fingers, crawled up the sides of slumped cottages. I passed a strangely askew building, with crumbling limestone peering through what remained of the plaster facing. Swinging doors hung ajar, making the entrance look like a dead mouth. On the lintel above them was a stein, so faded that the painted beer inside looked like piss. Written above the stein in faded, straggling maroon letters was the word, "Beware." Next to it was what had once probably been a store of some kind. A shatter of glass lay on the road in front. Mindful of the three-wheeler's rubber tires, I gave the broken glass a wide berth. A bit further on, there were buildings on both sides now, standing almost shoulder to shoulder but with dark little passages between. We passed through a stink, so strong and sewerish that it made me gag and hold my breath. Radar didn't like it either. She whined uneasily and stirred, making the three-wheeler rock a little. I'd been thinking about stopping for something to eat, but that stench changed my mind. It wasn't decaying flesh, but it was something that had spoiled in some holy and perhaps unholy way. An herbage rank and wild, I thought. And that line brought back memories of Jenny Schuster, sitting with her under a tree, the two of us leaning against the trunk in the dappled shade, her wearing the tattered old vest that was her trademark and holding a paperback book in her lap. It was called The Best of H.P. Lovecraft, and she was reading me a poem called Fungi from Yugoth. I remembered how it began. The place was dark and dusty and half lost in tangles of old alleys near the quays. And suddenly, the reason why this place was freaking me out came into focus. I was still miles from Lillimar, what that refugee boy had called the haunted city. But even here, things were wrong, in ways I don't think I could have consciously understood if not for Jenny, who introduced me to Lovecraft when both of us were sixth graders, too young and impressionable for such horrors. Jenny and I became book buddies during my father's last year of drinking and first year of sobriety. She was a girlfriend as opposed to a girlfriend, which means something entirely different. I'll never understand why you want to hang with her, Bertie said once. I think he was jealous, but I think he was also honestly perplexed. Do you, like, make out with her? Suck face swap spits? We did not, and I told him so. I said she didn't interest me in that way. Bertie smirked and said, what other way is there? I could have told him, but that would have perplexed him more than ever. It was true that Jenny didn't have what the Birdman would have called the kind of bod you want to explore. At 11 or 12, most girls are showing the first faint curves, but Jenny was as flat as a board in front and straight all the way down. She had a raw-boned face, mousy brown hair that was always in a tangle, and a storky way of walking. The other girls made fun of her, of course. She was never going to be a cheerleader or homecoming queen or star in a class play. And if she wanted such things, or the approval of the girls who mixed and matched and wore eyeshadow, she never showed it. I'm not sure she ever felt so much as an ounce of peer pressure. She didn't dress goth, wore jumpers with that funky vest on top and carried a Han Solo lunchbox to school, but she had a goth mentality. She worshipped a punk band called the Dead Kennedys, could quote lines from Taxi Driver, and loved the stories and poems of H.P. Lovecraft. She and I and H.P.L. connected toward the end of my dark period, when I was still getting up to stupid shit with Bertie Bird. One day, in sixth grade English class, the discussion turned to the works of R.L. Stein. I had read one of his books, Can You Keep a Secret, it was called, and thought it was mondo stupid. I said so, then said I'd like to read something that was really scary instead of fake scary. Jenny caught up with me after class. Hey, read. Are you afraid of big words? I said I was not. I said if I couldn't figure out a word from the story, I looked it up on my phone. That seemed to please her. Read this, she said, and handed me a battered paperback held together with scotch tape. See if it scares you, because it scared the living shit out of me. That book was called The Call of Cthulhu, and the stories in it scared me plenty, especially one called The Rats in the Walls. There were also lots of big words to look up, like tenebrous and malodorous, which was the perfect word for what I smelled near that bar. We bonded over horror, possibly because we were the only sixth graders who were willing to wade, and gladly, through the thickets of Lovecraft's prose. For over a year, until Jenny's parents broke up and she moved to Des Moines with her mother, we read the stories and poems to each other aloud. We also saw a couple of movies made out of his stories, but they sucked. None of them got how big that guy's imagination was, and how fucking dark. As I pedaled my way toward the walled city of Lillimar, I realized this silent outer ring was too much like one of HPL's dark fairy tales of Arkham and Dunwich. Put in the context of that and other tales of otherworldly terror, we moved on to Clark Ashton Smith, Henry Kuttner, and August Derleth. I was able to understand what was so frightening and strangely disheartening about the empty streets and houses. To use one of Lovecraft's favorite words, they were eldritch. A stone bridge took us over a dead canal. Large rats prowled through garbage so ancient there was no telling what it had been before it became garbage. The canal's slanting stone sides were streaked with blackish-brown crap, what Lovecraft would undoubtedly have called ordure. And the stink rising from the cracked black mud? He would have called it mephitic. Those words came back to me. This place brought them back. On the other side of the canal, the buildings crowded even closer together, the spaces between them not alleys or passages, but mere cracks a person would have to sidle through. And who knew what might be lurking in there, waiting for the sidler? These empty edifices overhung the street, seeming to bulge toward the trike, and covering all but a zigzag of white sky. I felt watched, not just from those black and glassless windows, but by them, which was even worse. Something terrible had happened here. I was sure of it. Something monstrous, and yes, eldritch. The source of the gray might still be ahead in the city, but it was strong even out here in these deserted environs. Besides feeling watched, there was a crepitant sensation of being followed. Several times I snapped my head around, trying to catch someone or something, some frightful fiend, slipping along in our wake. I saw nothing but crows and the occasional rat, possibly headed back to its nesting place or colony in the shadows of that mud-floored canal. Radar felt it too. She growled several times, and once when I looked around, I saw her sitting up with her paws on the end of the wicker basket and looking back the way we had come. Nothing, I thought. These narrow streets and tumble-down houses are deserted. You've just got the heebie-jeebies. Radar, too. We came to another bridge over another desolate canal, and on one of its pillars, I saw something that cheered me up. The initials A.B. Not quite covered by incrustations of sickly yellow-green moss. The crowded buildings had caused me to lose sight of the city wall for an hour or two, but on the bridge, I could see it clearly, smooth and gray and at least 40 feet high. In the center was a titanic gate, crisscrossed with thick supports of what looked like cloudy green glass. The wall and gate were visible, because most of the buildings between where I stood and the city wall had been reduced to rubble by what looked like a bombing attack. Some sort of cataclysm, anyway. A few charred chimneys stood up like pointing fingers, and a few buildings had been spared. One looked like a church. Another was a long building with wooden sides and a tin roof. In front of it was a wheelless red wagon engulfed in pale weeds. I had heard the two bells signaling midday, chow time for Hannah, I thought, less than 2 hours ago, which meant I'd made much better time than Claudia had expected. There was plenty of daylight left, but I had no intention of approaching the gate today. I needed to rest and get my head on straight, if that were possible.
I think we're here, I told Radar. It's not the Holiday Inn, but it'll do.
I pedaled past the abandoned wagon and up to the storage shed. There was a big roll-up door, its once jolly red faded to a sickly pink, and a smaller, man-sized door beside it. Chipped into the paint were the initials A.B. Seeing them made me feel good, just as the ones on the bridge pillar had, but there was something else that made me feel even better. That sense of creeping doom had lifted. Maybe it was because the buildings were gone and I could feel space around me and see the sky again, but I don't think that was all. That sense of what Lovecraft might have called ancient evil was gone. Later, not too long after the three evening bells, I discovered why. 3. The man-sized door wouldn't open until I really put my shoulder into it, then burst open so suddenly I almost fell inside. Radar barked from her basket. The storage shed was gloomy and smelled stale, but not mephitic or odorous. Bulking in the gloom were two more trolleys painted red and blue. They had undoubtedly been in the shed for years, but because they were out of the elements, the paint had stayed fresh and they looked almost cheerful. Poles jutted from their roofs, so I guessed at some time or other they must have run on overhead wires that provided current. If so, those wires were long gone. I had seen none on my journey. On the front of one, in old-fashioned letters, was the word Seafront. Over the other, Lillimar. There were stacks of iron-bound wheels with thick wooden spokes and boxes of rusty tools. I also saw a line of torpedo-shaped lamps on a table that stood against the far wall. Radar barked again. I went back and lifted her out of the basket. She staggered a little, then limped to the door. She sniffed and went inside without any further hesitation. I tried the big roll-up door, the ones the trolleys must have used, but it wouldn't budge. I left the smaller one open for light and checked the lamps. It looked like it was going to be a dark night for Prince Charlie and his faithful sidekick Radar, because the oil in their reservoirs was long gone. And Claudia's three-wheeler would have to spend the night outside, because the smaller door was too narrow for it. The wooden spokes of the spare trolley wheels were dry and splintery. I knew I could break off enough wood for a fire, and I had brought the Zippo my dad used to light his pipe, but no way was I going to build a campfire inside. It was too easy to imagine sparks landing on the old trolleys and lighting them up, leaving us with no refuge but the church-type building, which looked rickety. I got out a couple of cans of sardines and some of the meat Dora had packed for me. I ate and drank a Coke. Radar refused the meat, tried a sardine, then dropped it on the dusty wooden floor. She had been happy with Dora's molasses cookies before, so I tried that. She sniffed, then turned her head away. Perky jerky was also a no-go. I stroked the sides of her face. What am I going to do with you, girl? Fix her, I thought. If I can. I started for the door, wanting another look at the wall surrounding the city, then had an inspiration. I went back to my pack, rummaged, and found the last few pecan sandies in a baggie underneath my useless iPhone. I offered her one. She sniffed it carefully, took it in her mouth, and ate it, plus three more before turning away. Better than nothing. 4. I watched the light through the open door and occasionally went out to look around. All was still. Even the rats and crows were avoiding this part of town. I tried tossing Raids her monkey. She caught it once and gave it a few token squeaks, but didn't try bringing it back to me. She laid it between her paws and went to sleep with her nose touching it. Claudia's liniment had helped her, but the effects had worn off, and she wouldn't take the last three pills the vet's assistant had given me. I thought she had used up her last real burst of energy, running down the spiral steps and racing to meet Dora. If I didn't get her to the sundial soon, I'd find her not asleep, but dead. I would have played games on my phone to pass the time if it worked, but it was just a black glass rectangle. I tried restarting it, but didn't even get the apple. There was no fairy tale magic in the world I had come from, and no magic from my world in this one. I put it back in my pack and watched the open doorway as the white overcast light began to weaken. The three evening bells donged, and I almost closed the door then, but I didn't want to be in the dark with nothing but Dad's lighter to knock it back until I had to. I kept my eye on the church, if that's what it was, across the road, and thought when I could no longer see it, I'd shut the door. The absence of birds and rats didn't necessarily mean the absence of wolves or other predators. Claudia had told me to bolt myself in, and that was just what I intended to do. When the church was just a dim shape in a darkening world, I decided to pull the door shut. Radar raised her head, perked her ears, and gave a low woof. I thought it was because I'd gotten up, but that wasn't it. Old or not, her ears were better than mine. I heard it a few seconds later. A low, fluttering sound, like paper caught in a fan. It approached rapidly, growing in volume until it was the sound of a rising wind. I knew what it was. And as I stood in the doorway with one hand on the three-wheeler's seat, Radar joined me. We both watched the sky. The monarchs came from the direction I had arbitrarily decided was the south, the direction I'd come from. They darkened the darkening sky in a cloud below the clouds. They settled on the church-type building across the way, on a few standing chimneys, on piles of rubble, and on the roof of the storage shed where Radar and I had taken shelter. The sound of them settling up there, there must have been thousands, was less a fluttering than a long, drawn-out sigh. Now I thought I understood why this part of the bombed-out wasteland seemed safe to me, rather than desolate. It was safe. The monarchs had kept this one outpost in a world that had once been better, one that existed before the members of the royal family had been either assassinated or driven out. In my world, I believed, and I wasn't alone, all that royalty business was so much bullshit. Fodder for supermarket tabloids like the National Enquirer and Inside View. Kings and queens, princes and princesses were just another family, but one that had lucked into all the right numbers in the genetic version of Mega Millions. They took down their britches when they had to shit, just like the lowliest peons. But this wasn't that world. This was Empus, where the rules were different. This really was the other. The cloud of monarch butterflies had finished their homecoming, leaving only the growing dark. The sigh of their wings faded away. I would bolt the door because Claudia had told me to, but I felt safe. Protected. "Hail Empus," I said softly. "Hail the galleon, and may they rule again and forever." And why not? Just why the fuck not? Anything would be better than this desolation. I closed the door and bolted it. 5. In the dark, there was nothing to do but go to sleep. I put my pack between the two trolleys, next to where Radar had curled up, laid my head on it, and was asleep almost at once. My last thought was that with no alarm to wake me up, I might oversleep and get a late start, which could be lethal. I needn't have worried. Radar woke me up, coughing and coughing. I gave her some water, and that eased it a little. I had no clock but my bladder, which was pretty full but not bursting. I thought about urinating in one of the corners, then decided that was no way to treat a safe haven. I unbolted the door, opened it a little way, and peered out. No stars or moonlight showed through the low-hanging clouds. The church across the road looked blurry to me. I rubbed my eyes to clarify my vision, but the blur remained. It wasn't in my eyes. It was the butterflies, still fast asleep. I didn't think they lived long in our world, only weeks or months. Over here, who knew? Something shifted at the very edge of my vision. I looked, but either it had been my imagination, or whatever had been there was gone. I pissed, looking over my shoulder as I did it, then went back inside. I bolted the door and made my way to Radar. There was no need to use Dad's lighter. Her breathing was hoarse and loud. I drifted off to sleep again, maybe for an hour or so, maybe for two. I dreamed that I was in my own bed on Sycamore Street.
I sat up, tried to yawn, and couldn't. My mouth was gone. That snapped me awake to more canine coughing. One of Radar's eyes was open, but the other was stuck shut with that gooey stuff, giving her a sadly piratical look. I wiped it away and went to the door. The monarchs were still roosting, but a little light had come into the dull sky. It was time to eat something, then get going. I held an open can of sardines under Radar's nose, but she turned her head away at once, as if the smell sickened her. There were 2 pecan sandies left. She ate one, tried to eat the other, and coughed it out. She looked at me. I took her face in my hands and moved it gently from side to side in a way I knew she liked. I felt like crying. "Hold on, girl. Okay? Please." I carried her out the door and set her carefully on her feet. She walked to the left of the door with the glassy care of the elderly, found the spot where I had pissed earlier and added hers to mine. I bent to pick her up again, but she circled around me and went to the right-hand rear wheel of Claudia's trike, the one closest to the road. She sniffed at it, then dropped her haunches and pissed again. She gave a low, growling sound as she did it. I went to the rear wheel and bent down. There was nothing to see, but I felt sure that whatever I'd caught a glimpse of earlier had approached after I went back inside. Not only approached, but pissed on my ride, as if to say, "This is my territory." I had my pack, but I decided there was something else I wanted. I went back inside. Raid sat watching me. I hunted around until I found a moldering stack of blankets in the corner, perhaps meant long ago for trolley passengers to bundle around themselves in cold weather. If I hadn't decided to do my business outside, I might have pissed on them in the dark. I took one and shook it out. A number of dead moths fluttered down to the shed floor like big snowflakes. I folded it into a pad and carried it out to the three-wheeler.
"Okay, Raids, let's get this done. What do you say?"
I lifted her into the basket and then tucked the folded blanket down beside her. Claudia had instructed me to wait until the first